Welcome to Crime Most French, a fortnightly podcast covering intriguing cases carried out on French soil. Researched and narrated by Cedric and rudely interrupted by me, Melanie. We're the true crime podcast, Old Alliance. Crack open, Le Vin, and let the mayhem commence.
This is episode 88, The Pranzini Affair. On the 17th of March, 1887, the body of a woman, her servant, and the daughter of that servant are discovered horribly mutilated in a flat in Paris.
Oh, and they have servants, so it must be a fancy arrondissement.
Yes. And it's an oldie this time.
You said, what was it,
1887, okay. So on the 17th of March, 1887, in the morning, Julie Garrier, cook, comes down from her fifth-floor room, where she lives with her husband, to start work at her employer's flat on the third floor on the same building, Rue Montaigne. Rue Montaigne is 8th district, I think. That's one of the posh ones. 8th and 16th are the posh ones. In the Spider-Man episode, if you remember, the guy was watching a flat in Rue Montaigne, the one where he went back several times.
Oh, yes.
Well, that's the same street.
Okay, all right. Okay, so it is a fancy.
Yes.
Fancy.
Yes.
I mean, it's... when you see the archetypal tiny flats of Paris, if you kind of like go looking on YouTube and stuff, the smallest accommodations are always right in the roof because traditionally, you know, for those who, you know, are outside Europe, that's generally where the help were put, and it was the odd-shaped rooms because it was under the eaves of the roof, etc. So now if you, you know, rent in Paris, the cheapest, smallest, most awkward rooms are tend to be right under the roof where the servants used to stay.
Yes, and they're usually studios. Mm. They're very, very small. So the third floor flat belonged to Claudine Marie Regnault, a.k.a. Régine de Montille. She gave herself that aristocratic-sounding name because she saw herself as a courtesan.
Oh, I'm sorry, but, you know, you just have to do it to the bouquet residence.
Yes, exactly. Oh, that's probably how she sounded.
Yeah.
She made sure she spent time with the right people, and she distilled her affections to the right men.
Oh, yes. So, that had a certain bank balance.
Yes, I guess today she will be a super high-end escort or something.
Yeah, oh, I see. So she was probably looking for more of an aristocratic title rather than nouveau riche.
Yes, yeah, definitively, yeah.
Not after any of those newfangled factory owners. She probably wanted, you know, the money from having a title landed gentry type rather than that.
Well, she wanted money, really.
Oh, right, okay.
That's really what she was after.
She was just basically a gold digger.
Yes. I have Regnault in my ancestors as well, in the southwest of France, and that's how I'm connected. Well, that's one of the many ways, but that's the most obvious way I'm connected to the royal families.
Oh, you can go back to Charlemagne, though, can't you?
Yeah. So I wonder if she's related to that and if I'm related to her, but I don't know. I haven't checked. It's not a very uncommon name, and I don't know how closely related they are. But anyway, Régine was helped by Anne Grémeret, a.k.a. Annette, who has been by that point her servant for about 14 years. Annette had an accident when she was young, and she was left with a twisted spine. But she was absolutely devoted to her employer, I guess.
Yeah, her mistress, presumably. Yeah.
She has a daughter, Marie-Louise, with the English servant of a doctor who lived nearby.
Right, okay.
The relationship between Régine and Annette was so close that not only Régine had insisted to be Marie-Louise's godmother, but on the 9th of February 1887, she made Marie-Louise, her servant's daughter, her only inheritor.
Really?
Yes. So they had a very, very close relationship.
Yeah, but that is close. I'll look after your daughter.
Yes.
When I'm gone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, when Julie got to the third floor, let's go back to the story, via the service staircase, because all these buildings had two staircases, the front and the back one.
Yeah.
She found the door was still locked. Her habit was to knock on Annette's wall from the outside,
mm-hmm.
which meant that Marie-Louise, the daughter, would come and unchain the door so
right.
that she could come in. That's the way it's been working for the last 12 years. But on that day, when she knocked on the wall...
Nothing happened.
Silence.
Right.
Nobody came to open the door. She knocked harder. She called. Nothing. In desperation, she took one of her keys, because she had a key to the door, and opened the lock. But that didn't help because the chain was on.
Ah, right, okay.
So she could just see a little bit inside.
She poke her head in.
Yeah.
Not even poke her head
no,
in,
No, just...
I
guess. An,
yes.
She can see in the opening just a very small amount of the flat.
Mm-hmm.
But she couldn't spot anybody. It was completely silent in the flat. Hoping everything was well, but for some reason the occupants were still in bed, maybe, that's what she thought.
Right, okay.
She went back upstairs and she had nothing to do because she couldn't get in.
So this is, she thought the mistress was still asleep.
She thought everybody was still asleep for some reason. So, okay, let's go back to my room.
So she's just basically going upstairs.
Yeah, to the fifth floor. By 8:15, nothing had changed. So she started to panic a bit.
Mm.
Yeah, at the time, my first thought would be carbon monoxide or something like that, poisoning. Because that would have been very common with the wood burners and all that.
Yeah, that was very common.
So that would be my first thought if somebody wasn't answering the door when they were supposed to.
Yeah. So she was a cook as well. I mean, you would think people would be hungry by 8:15.
Yeah. So she decided to go down to the concierge and raise the alarm,
mm-hmm.
because all the buildings had a concierge.
Of course they did.
They still did when I was a kid in the 80s.
Mm, yeah, I remember.
Pretty much all those
saying.
Buildings had one. Even we had one in our building, and it wasn't a posh building. She goes down, and the concierge rushes up and knocks on the door, the front door this time. He knocks so hard that he broke the knocker on the door, but no answer. Nothing.
What is all he, Superman?
Yes. All he got is howling from Regine's two dogs. The dogs are called Dick and Lily.
Don't know why that's funny, but it is. I'll tell you what, if those were cats, those cats would be quiet because they'd already be eating everybody's faces off, because I know ours would.
At that point, you'd think that the concierge would call the police or something like that.
Yeah.
No. He went back downstairs to discuss what was happening, and exchange gossips on Regine and her
goings
servant
on. Yes.
With his wife and Julie for several hours. One of the things he mentioned was that on the previous night at about 11 p.m., as he was getting ready to close the gas in the building for the night, a man had rung the doorbell, on the street doorbell, and once he came in, he shouted, "Madame Monty," and... to the concierge, and he rushed upstairs. That guy looked posh, according to the concierge.
Right.
With a top hat, moustache and a coat.
And oh, but everybody had a moustache then, probably.
Yeah, it was era appropriate, yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody had come out during the night, though.
Right.
As far as the concierge, normally who the person would know, yeah, who would be the person to know.
So if this dude left, he would have left via the back stairs.
That would be the only way to do it, but it would be locked.
Right.
So he wouldn't have a key. So as far as he thought, the guy came in and never went out.
Yeah, so the dude would have still been
in the building,
the building, right.
At about 11 a.m., having run out of gossip, Julie and the concierge decided to alert the police. They went to the police station and explained the facts to the local commissioner. And the commissioner called a locksmith and went immediately to the flat.
Right. I was going to say, God, they went to the police station, but of course... We're talking, nobody would have had telephones at that point.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there would have been no telephone.
Yeah.
And there would have been a police station every street corner or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The commissioner, even though he's been in business for a good while, was surprised by what he found in the flat when it was opened by the locksmith. First, across her bedroom's door, Annette was on the floor with a massive gash to her neck. It was so deep that her spinal cord has been severed.
Holy crap.
And there was blood everywhere.
Mm, yeah.
On the bed, Marie-Louise, the daughter, was on her knees with cuts to her hands and she had been decapitated.
What the hell?
And in the other bedroom, Regine's bedroom, she was lying on the floor next to the bed, deep cut to her throat, all the way to the vertebrae, the gash was going from the neck all the way across the torso to under the arm.
Oh my God.
Like that, sword style.
Yeah, that's gruesome.
Yeah.
And that does sound like somebody's using like a...
Yeah.
Some kind of like... A big maybe not knife. A claymore, but yeah. Something big and sharp. Mm.
She was in the middle of a big puddle of blood and she had been covered by a blanket.
Covered? Well, that's weird.
Yes. Someone had slept in the bed with her that night.
Right.
Because the cops could see the indentation.
Right.
Also, someone had used one of the two silver sinks in the room to wash at least blood-covered hands.
Right.
And they left paw marks on a kettle next to it.
Paw marks. Okay.
Obviously, the murderer just was covered in blood and decided to clean before he left.
Hey, there wasn't the kind of like awareness of... Well, there was virtually no forensics back then anyway.
Yeah, we'll get into it in a minute.
Yeah.
The commissioner decided to alert the police prefect at that point.
Right.
And reported the triple murder and declared that nothing had been stolen. Though that last part was very wrong. And clearly he didn't look very closely.
Right.
There are signs of theft and searches everywhere in the flat in reality.
I guess the kind of like the methodology wasn't as systematic back then.
It's not even that. She didn't really look.
Just lazy.
No. Yeah, vaguely looked and said, it looked all right. And
because it hadn't been ransacked and turned completely upside down.
Yeah.
Okay.
But as soon as the other cops arrived, and they arrived with the prefect, an inserting judge and a prosecutor, then immediately they noticed that things had been searched and moved around.
Did the prefe normally get involved?
No, but because it was a triple murder in a posh area, he obviously decided to get involved.
Right.
Normally, no, the prefe is not involved in day-to-day stuff.
Okay.
Well, at least now, I don't know how much time. But
could you imagine any of the prefes we've had to deal with getting involved in a murder scene?
Yes.
No.
So they look at the crime scene a bit more carefully.
Mm-hmm.
And they find a bloody wallet with no money. That's where Regine was known to keep her money.
Right.
A piggy bank broken on the floor where Regine was keeping the money she won gambling. A candle holder broken on the floor where she kept her keys. Also, earring with large diamonds had gone. As well as a massive solitaire that she always had on her finger.
So this new robbery is obviously...
Yeah, it's complete nonsense.
Completely wrong.
So she also had a safe in her room between the two windows, and it was covered in blood paw marks, but it wasn't open.
All right, okay.
Obviously, the murderer had tried to open the safe and failed.
So obviously not a master safe cracker.
Yes. So suddenly the flat that hadn't been burgled, now theft and burglary is the likely... Motive.
Although it seems just utterly barbaric, killing everybody.
Yes, and decapitating as well.
Yeah.
Several letters are found in Regine's desk. They all mention seeing her on some date.
Mm-hmm.
One of them attracts one of the judges' attention. It's a guy called Gaston, who describes some kind of affair that he had in Nancy, so eastern France.
Yeah.
Of which Regine doesn't know any details and asks her to rip and dispose of the letter as usual.
Mm.
She hadn't.
I'm just smiling in my head that the dude's called Gaston because the bad guy in Beauty and the Beast is Gaston.
Oh, I see. It's a very common name at the time.
Yes.
Nobody knows who that man is because he's not signing his surname. And why the letter is in the drawer where, according to her friends, Regine doesn't keep her letters. She kept them somewhere else.
Right.
So there's a little bit of fishy stuff that they find straight away.
Yeah.
So then they start investigating seriously. The first thing the police decided was that there was only one killer, mainly because the three women were killed in exactly the same way.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just that poor wee girl. How bloody terrified she must have been.
Yes. The commissioner's working theory was that a man came to see Regine at 11 p.m., as seen by the concierge. And he was let in by Regine because there was no damage to the door before the concierge broke the knock on it.
So clearly someone she was expecting and she knew.
Either expecting or knew. She might not have expected, but it, She let the person in, obviously.
Well, it's kind of weird you would let someone in that late at night if you weren't expecting them.
Yeah, it's
true. Even if you knew them, that would be weird.
Yeah, so presumably she was waiting for him. Once in, she took him to her bedroom and they were both in bed for a while, as shown by the indentation in the mattress.
Mm.
Then at some point he attacked her. She tried to flee and he caught her quickly and cut her throat. Not before she managed to grab the bell that was going to Annette's bedroom. And they know that because when they looked at the bell, they pulled on it, it just came off. She had pulled so hard that she broke the wire in it.
Oh, God, okay. So in her desperation.
Yes. So then the man went to Annette's bedroom because he knew that she was there because of the bell, obviously. At that time, she probably had got up already. And she had time to go to her door to open it to see what was going on. And they're saying that's when he arrived. So she tried to block it. But he was in before she could lock it.
Mm.
And then he jumped on her, cut her throat. Before she could do anything. There was no defensive marks or anything on her.
Let's face it. This woman isn't going down the gym 4 times a week and doing CrossFit. She's a genteel lady who has, servants. She wouldn't be able to put up any kind of a fight now, compared to women now. Women now are much more savvy of, where to hit a bloke to try and, keep themselves safe. But she wouldn't be.
Yes. And that's at that point, they think that the man would have noticed the daughter, Marie-Louise, who was hiding under the blankets. And maybe she made a noise, maybe she moved, they don't know. He jumped on her to kill her, but she had time to try to defend herself. So that's why she had lots of cuts on her hands and arms, whereas the others didn't.
Yeah, so we've got one woman who wasn't in a position to look after herself, one woman who was physically not able to look after herself, because let's face it, she had some kind of problem with her spine.
Yes.
And a wee girl who obviously saw what had happened to her mother, so she had...
Yes. So they see on her body lots of stabbing marks.
Yeah.
And eventually they think that she was overpowered. Of course, she was a kid. She was 12 or so.
Yeah.
And he decapitated her.
Poor wee spud.
So the police questions the neighbours. There's an old doctor whose bedroom is directly below Regine's bedroom, who heard someone walk down the stairs between 5 and 6.
Right, okay.
He was certain it was only one person. And he felt that the steps were hurried.
Oh, right, okay, yeah, right.
The doctor's servant, who had her bedroom just below Annette's bedroom, reported that between 5 and 6 she heard a loud thump upstairs.
Oh, like a body hitting the floor.
Yeah, and then she heard a little girl moan.
Oh, no.
She only heard one person walk after that in the flat.
Right.
And she assumed that someone had fallen upstairs for some reason and got up again. 20 minutes later, she heard someone walk down the stairs, which matches the doctor's...
Okay, yeah, verifies the doctor's statement.
Yeah. Another neighbour across the inside courtyard, because all these buildings had an inside courtyard, but it's a very small courtyard because his window was about 3.5 metres from Annette's window.
Yeah, you have to think...
Nearly touch it at that point.
You have to think, Amelie has... she lives in that kind of building, if you've seen Amelie. It's a really good film.
Yeah.
But... it's like Rear Window, but it's kind of like Rear
Window. Much smaller.
Rear Window is massive compared to the...
Yeah, yeah.
It's almost like you can reach out and touch.
3.5 metres, nearly.
Yeah.
Yes. So that neighbour reported that he wasn't feeling well on that day and he couldn't sleep at that night. And at 5, he heard a moan from across the courtyard.
Mm.
Then a few seconds later, a child scream, and he thought that it was his son, who was sleeping next door to his room.
No, he probably went rushing in to check.
And saw that his son was asleep.
Okay.
So
he went, phew.
Yes. The autopsy of the 3 victims confirmed the timeline. The victims' stomachs were completely empty. So it's long after dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And their bladders were full. So it's not long before they got up.
Mm-hmm.
Once the police had opened the safe, they made an inventory of the contents and compared to what witnesses said Regine owned in money, jewellery, shares in companies and all that.
Mm.
The total was negligible and a few things were missing. The police circulated the list of what was missing with the description of every single item. all the way around the country.
Mm-hmm.
They were hoping that somebody would try to sell them. Even Annette had been robbed as well, they noticed. She had a purse with a list of her valuables. The way they used to work, Annette had some stuff, some things that had value to her,
right.
And she was storing them in Regine's safe,
right.
But she was keeping a list of what was in that safe. So they find the list.
Well, that's handy.
Yes.
But robbing the servant as well, that just seems really bloody low.
Yes. But the things that were on the list were nowhere. So they find that a bit strange. They learn from witnesses that earlier she had taken them out for some reason. They are thinking that maybe she was planning to sell them. So they weren't in the safe anymore.
Right.
But not because these were stolen. Her wallet was stolen, but not her valuables in the safe, because we know the safe wasn't open.
Yeah.
In Regine's bedroom, after moving a chair between the fireplace and the window, the police discovered a belt, well used, with inside written Gaston Gessler.
The evil Gaston.
It doesn't have any trace of blood, though. But could it be the same as the letter?
Mm.
Same Gaston as in the letter, although the name was so common at the time that probably didn't mean anything. Near her body, the police also find a shirt cuff. At the time, they weren't part of the shirt. They were a separate bit from the shirt.
Mm. Yes, and then they swapped over to paper to save money. Yeah.
Then another matching one near Annette's body.
Mm-hmm.
These two were covered in blood. They are marked with the manufacturer's name in Nancy. Remember, we heard of Nancy,
yes,
in the letter.
With Gaston and,
yes,
Nancy, okay. Still, there's probably going to be quite a lot of Gastons.
And Gaston Gessler had been added inside.
Okay.
So again, it's somewhere, some link between that Gaston, whoever he is,
yeah,
with the blood and the murder.
Mm.
The police wonders if these were planted with the letter to divert the police, because they were told,
yes,
the letters are
not normally
kept
there. Yeah, so.
So they're thinking, is it somebody who's trying to frame that guy?
Yeah, is it a massive red herring?
Yeah, they're not sure at that point. But clearly it's somebody they want to talk to, because somehow he's involved. Even if he's not the murderer, he's involved.
Yes.
The San Juan Paris, the equivalent of a bolo at the time, to see if there's any Gessler that had rented a hotel room,
okay,
somewhere.
Oh man, that would have been a lot of shoe leather. Try to find that out.
Yes. A few days later, a police inspector reports that a suspect-looking man had checked in Hotel Cailleux, Rue Saint-Quentin, under the name Gessler Henri Gessler.
Mm. So he changed his first name, but now he's second.
Yeah, so he said he was 35 and from Vienna.
Did he have a moustache? From Vienna?
Yes.
Right.
At the hotel, the auto tells inspectors that the man indeed registered under that name, coming from a train from Belgium. He didn't speak good French and had booked the room for 2 weeks. He had paid every day the first week for a cheap under-the-roof room for 2 francs a day. He hadn't paid the second week. He was kicked out of the hotel on the 16th of March after refusing to pay. When he left, he left a suitcase behind. So the inspector searched it, described it as a mean suitcase. In it, he found two shirts without cuffs, with initials GG. A nightshirt with two pairs of socks, all marked GG in Gothic letters. Collars from a manufacturer in Germany, 7 keys on the ring, a knife, a pair of leather gloves, two purses, one containing some German coins, a locket with a photo of an old woman inside.
So it does seem like the dude, the Vienna, kind of like, but I mean, he must have had some money to have all that stuff monogrammed.
I suspect it was very cheap to do at the time. Everybody knew how to sew, and there would have been shops that touched or adjusted clothes in every street corner. I don't think it would have been expensive to get that done at the time.
Well, I still think you would need above a certain
A bit of money maybe, but not. You don't need to be rich. He also found some papers, mostly from Germany, and a voting invite from Prussia.
Right, okay. Oh, yes.
That was after the reunification of Germany, yes, but not long after.
Yes. A good decade, 1872, German unification was.
So they connected some dots there. The name Gessler, the shirt lacking cuffs, the initials GG. Also, his description matches quite well the description given by Julian, the concierge's wife, of a man they saw a couple of times in the building the days preceding the murders.
All right, okay.
There is a lot of discussion between the concierge, his wife, and Julie about who exactly they saw. Because the guy that the concierge saw getting in at night didn't match the description that they made of the person they saw earlier in the week.
Oh, right, okay.
But they convinced him it was the same person. So he said it was the same person when he talked to the police.
Why is it... witnesses are just so bad.
Oh, witnesses are useless. So the police chief is told by the press that the murderer is arrested in Marseille. He didn't know about it. So that's a little while later.
That's a long way away.
He knew nothing about what was going on and he was absolutely furious. He received a message a little while later from the commissioner in Marseille telling him that a man had been arrested. He was selling jewelry in a bordello, legal at the time, for a fraction of their value, and it matched very well the description that had been circulated around the country of what Regine's jewels were.
He was selling stuff in a bordello?
Yes. To the girls in the...
To the ladies?
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, they were so cheap that the owner had called the police to report the guy because they thought it's so cheap it can only be stolen. And they didn't want to be involved in that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's the owner of the place that called the police. They, however, managed to find him after he left and they arrested him. He denied having anything to do with the murders, obviously the witnesses do. And he denied being German. He said that he was Italian, which the press laughed at given his accent. But he admits that he came from Paris and he admits he knew Regine. So he gave the name Pranzini to the cops.
I wondered where this name was going to come in.
The name rang a bell with the police. In a drawer in Regine's flat, the police had found a bunch of business cards. One of them had the name Henry Pranzini.
Okay.
The police had
Henry.
Visited...
There a Henry Gaston? No, Henry...
Gessler.
Yeah, Gessler.
In the hotel, yes. The police had visited the address on the card, but they were told that the person in question had gone on a trip. They retraced his movements, and they think that he arrived by the fast train, fast with lots of airbornies, because fast in 1887, that can't be that fast. Anyway, he arrived by the fast train shortly after midnight. He jumped immediately in a shuttle to the hotel. He had a handbag with him, no suitcase. At the hotel, he registered under the name Pranzini and said he was a Swedish doctor.
That does not sound like a Swedish doctor.
Yes, and he said...
I mean, he sounds like a high wire act or something from the circus.
Yeah.
The Panzinis!
But he's not good at choosing believable things.
No.
But anyway, he said that he was on a trip from Lyon to Singapore, which he couldn't spell. He spelled Singapore wrong.
And Lyon to Singapore, that's a long journey.
Well, yes. It would be probably by boat at the time around Africa.
Yeah.
So yeah, it would take a few weeks. But anyway...
That would be how he's trying to explain the fact he's in Marseille then.
Yes. At about 1 a.m., he went to a nearby restaurant where he spotted a bored and yawning girl, apparently, called Clotilde, and he invited her to his table. At about 3 a.m., he took her to her house and spent the night with her. He put first some money on the fireplace, saying that it was a gift for her. But at 8 a.m., when he was getting ready to leave...
Well, it was gone.
He demanded to get his money back. She refused, but he took out a gun and told her he could make her. So he took the money and left.
Oh, he's an Indian giver. Boo, we don't like him. Although, going home with a dude, just randomly picking up a dude in a bar.
Restaurant.
Oh, restaurant, but, yes. Yeah. Still, yuck.
Small difference, yes. A bit later, he attacked a well-dressed man in the street. He was a banker from Alexandria, Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
He demanded an amount of money, saying that he was a trader from Egypt. And the guy refused, so Pranzini reduced the amount, tried to negotiate down, and the guy still refused.
Never tried to rob a banker, eh?
Yeah, and eventually he gave up. The guy just completely refused to give him any money.
Haggling, that's hilarious.
Yes, so he went down to the post office from there, where he sent a telegram to a woman in Paris pretending to be called Jules Oa.
So this guy is just like an all-round scuzzbag.
Oh, totally. At 10 a.m. he entered a jeweler and asked to see some silver watches. The woman behind the counter, finding his manners really unnerving, called her aunt, who owned the shop. To make him go away, they agreed on 40 francs for a watch and sent him on his way. But after he received the receipts, he ripped it. And they were very surprised with that.
Oh, that's weird.
But he just left, so they were happy. At 11 a.m., he went back to his hotel. He asked a maid if a woman had inquired about him and if a parcel had arrived for him. Negative on both.
Right.
Both counts. So he left again.
Okay.
He went to another restaurant at 1 p.m. After his meal, I think it was bouillabaisse, but anyway, that's not relevant to the story.
And that's detailed.
Yes. Oh, I think he had two portions of bouillabaisse, if you want to be precise. He asked the restaurant to find him a cab.
Right.
He first went back to the hotel where he stayed, and he stayed just long enough to ask the clerk when the mail was supposed to arrive. He went back to the cab, but never gave the signal to go. So he just stayed there for about half an hour.
So he's just sitting in the back of this cab?
Yeah. Then he went back into the hotel. But as the postie hadn't been yet, he walked the lobby for a while in circles.
Okay.
Swearing to himself.
So I'm presuming he's waiting for this parcel.
He's obviously waiting for something, yes. Mm. The postie finally arrived at 2:30. And he had a white rectangular box for Pranzini, closed with several wax seals.
All right.
And the guy in the hotel noticed that because it wasn't common. Normally you have one wax seal, but apparently there were wax seals everywhere on the box.
All right, okay. Didn't have his writing on the top, did it?
I don't know. I don't remember any mention of writing. No,
all
I don't
right.
know.
It feels like he sent himself something.
Oh, I see. No, I don't know. It had been posted in Paris on the 19th at 8 a.m. by a Dr. Foster.
Hmm.
For Dr. Pranzini.
Dr. Pranzini.
Apparently now he's a doctor, yes.
Okay.
That well, he said he was a Swedish doctor, so why not?
Well, that's true.
So he went to his room with the parcel, stayed 10 minutes, then went back to the lobby and walked out for an hour and a half.
He really wanted to catch the sights and sounds of Marseille.
Yes, but then he asked the clerk in the hotel when was the next mail delivery. And the guy said, it's Sunday today, that's it for the day.
Wow, you got parcels in
there. Oh, you used to have three deliveries a day and delivery on Sunday.
On a Sunday? I'm very surprised you got stuff on a Sunday.
No, you used to have deliveries normally on Sunday, but only one. Whereas the rest of the week, it would be three deliveries, morning, lunchtime and evening. So yes, he was told, man, next one is Monday morning. So he went back to his cab, who was still outside, waiting. Guy, very patient, they wouldn't do that now. And asked to be taken to a place where he could meet the good society. He was taken to a posh restaurant, but on his way, he diverted to the toilets. So as he was going into the restaurant, he diverted to the toilets, which were outside.
That's weird.
And disappeared for a moment. He came back without his parcel. And the girl that was monitoring the toilets at the time told the police that he hadn't used the toilets, but had flushed. She was obviously listening to what he was doing.
Well, that's kind of creepy.
It's a bit creepy. I guess that was her job.
Oh, okay.
So she thought that he was getting rid of something.
Yeah.
Then Prentini instructed the cab driver to take him to the opera, where he booked a seat for the evening.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you now realise I just have Brad Pitt in my head.
Why?
What's in the box?
After that, he asked the driver to take him to a bordello. The driver offered a decent but cheap one. But Pranzini complained that money was no object to him, and he wanted a good one. But in the end, he agreed on the cheap one. So obviously he was pretending. That's where he tried to sell the jewelry to the girls. Okay. So we're getting back to the story. The one thing the girls noticed was that his hands were covered in plasters, or the equivalent of plasters at the time.
So looks like he handled something quite sharp recently.
Yes.
Okay.
They thought that he had cut wounds, but they weren't sure because it was covered.
Okay.
When the girls asked him what it was, he said that he had just arrived by boat from Alexandria, and the cold had damaged his hands. They didn't believe him for a second.
No.
Back to his cab, he asked to be taken to another restaurant where he had dinner at about 8 p.m.
Did he have his third bowl of bouillabaisse?
I don't have the menu for that one.
I need to know, goddammit.
There he made some trouble to not pay parts of his meal, saying that he hadn't had much of it and therefore didn't want to pay for it.
No, that's not how that works.
Yes. And also he was very nervous and everybody in the restaurant noticed.
I mean, is he trying to make himself hugely conspicuous? Because that's
I think
he's
not good at hiding in the background. No. No. He's utterly rubbish and not being seen.
I mean, if you've, you know, done a triple homicide and then, you know, you're trying to lie low somewhere. I mean, you've gone to a big, busy port town, which is probably quite a good option, but then you're just behaving like a maniac. You're just behaving so weirdly that everybody remembers you.
Yes. Yeah, no, I don't know. I have no idea why he's doing all that. Finally, the cab took him to the opera, as planned, in the evening, because he bought a ticket, and he paid his bill to the cab. By that point, the police was looking for him.
Right.
Because he had been reported, remember, by the girls.
Yeah, well, he's got some hot jewellery.
So they had sent inspectors to the various hotels
to
in town to try to find him.
Yeah.
But as he lied to so many people, they really had trouble finding a room where he was registered.
Yeah.
They couldn't find him. But luckily, the cab driver heard of the police looking for a guy and alerted the cops and told him where I took him.
Uh-huh.
So they arrested him when he was coming out of the opera house.
So just as well everybody is so gossipy.
Yeah, I guess so. They showed him the jewellery he sold to the prostitutes.
Mm.
And he denied ever owning that stuff. He said that they were trying to scam him, clearly.
Mm. And those women, you can't trust them.
Yes, he said they were lying.
Yeah.
But he did say that, yes, he knew them and had paid them. But none of what they said was true. The police noticed the hand wounds, obviously, and the lack of cuffs on his shirt. They first thought that the wounds were due to a knife, but the doctor looked at them and said they were scratch marks, as in nails, scratch marks.
Yes, yes.
During the night, he tried to commit suicide in his cell.
Uh-oh, he's got something to hide.
Yeah. He shredded part of his coat and made a rope with it and tried to hang himself, but failed.
Right. Tried to do a Jeffrey Epstein.
Yes. When he was questioned over the next few days, he denied everything, because of course, only saying that he was in Marseille for tourism. So he's no longer a Swedish doctor going from Lyon to Singapore. Unfortunately for Pranzini, the police contacted the jewelers Regine used to visit.
Right.
One of them recognized the description of the watch, which he had repaired twice.
Okay.
And even provided serial numbers to the police of parts in the watch that he had changed. So they could match them.
Ooh, that's thorough.
Another jeweler also recognized the earrings that he tried to sell the prostitutes.
Okay, right. Yeah.
So that's now a whole bunch of things that directly can
link
be proven
to
come
to
from that
woman.
Flat that he had in his hands.
Theft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be doubly sure, the police searched the force where in the toilets where he went and disappeared with his box.
Oh, yes.
He denies having been there, obviously.
Oh, yes.
And they found more jewellery that also can be pretty certainly traced back to Regine.
So not Gwyneth Paltrow's head in the box, but jewellery.
No, jewellery. And that was enough to keep him and charge him with the murders in Paris.
Mm. Of course, nowadays you would just, you know, get the scrapings from underneath the nails.
Yeah, but they didn't even have fingerprints at the time.
No.
So there was just no forensics.
I mean, being certain of guilt in, you know, pre-forensic times are just so loose.
Or it was entirely based on witnesses.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we know how reliable they are.
We know, but there's so many of them in this case.
Yeah.
Oh, it's hard to deny.
Well, this has more. This is an actual hard evidence. You
yes.
know, like
yeah, because you have the jury.
Yes,
you had and, that and jury that you shouldn't have had. So yeah. So who was Gessler then? You might wonder.
Yeah.
Because at that point, I was still wondering who that dude. What was that name that was used?
So Gaston was never real, presumably.
Well, the police is wondering. Is it Gessler that killed Regine and somehow gave the jewelry to Pranzini? Or did Pranzini kill Regine? That's really the question at that point for the trial.
Well, I would have thought the GG was just another one of his pseudonyms. I mean, he's giving himself different names all over the shop.
Yes, but it's not that.
Oh, okay.
Eventually, they managed to find out what that name was. 6 years earlier, Pranzini worked for a while in a hotel in Naples. He was caught stealing and was fired. Apparently, that's something that happened to him several times. Okay. Eventually, didn't discover that. His boss there was called G. Gessler. For revenge, he stole some of his clothes.
Oh, okay.
And that's how he ended up having clothes with G. Gessler on it.
Okay.
Because he had stolen them from his boss.
So this guy did actually exist, but
it had nothing to do with the story, but he did exist, yes.
I mean, Naples to Paris, at that point, you'd be as well being on the other side of the world.
Yes. But at least that explains that name. Yes. And again, it links Pranzini to the murders.
Yes.
But another way.
Foolish, foolish man. Leaving so many fingerprints without realising.
Yeah. So the trial starts on the 9th of July, 1887 in Paris.
Mm.
And during the trial, more clues are provided. For example, the police managed to track where Pranzini had bought the butcher's knife on the 10th of March. That's a long story. I'm not going to go into all the details. There was lots of negotiations and trials and bringing back knives and changing his mind about what kind of meat he wanted to cut. Anyway, that's a very, very long story that I read in the newspapers. But the shop owners recognized him. That was important.
Once again, making himself totally conspicuous by behaving like an oddball.
Yeah, he just acts in the way that makes him remembered by everybody he meets.
Mm-hmm.
It's complete nonsense, but that's what he does. They also found out that the day before the murder, Pranzini had looked for a fake beard. And the seller, which they find, obviously they find because he is remembered, remembers that he wanted a beard that would make him unrecognizable, but was quick to take off. Like an innocent person would want. So again, of course the shopkeeper remembers him.
Well, yeah, why on earth would you say that?
Oh my God. So there are other witnesses that say that Pranzini asked for money on the days before the murder because he told them he was expecting a large income from his family, but he needed money a bit earlier than
that. Of course. That's a Nigerian prince origin story.
Yes, but the police know that his dad is in fact dead already and his mum is a flower seller in Alexandria, so there's no money coming from that side of the family.
I mean, you have to think he is just a petty thief and has tried to kind of like upgrade to grifter, but he's really bad at it.
He's very bad at it. But also that gives the police now the excuse of charging him with premeditation because he wanted money in the previous days.
Right.
Before the murder, and he stole money during the murders.
Uh-huh.
So now they're saying he was looking for money and he was going to kill those people. So now it's premeditation.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be manslaughter.
I'm thinking when you're actually physically cutting somebody's head off.
Yeah.
That does not count as manslaughter.
So all that, the testimonies, the information that the police found in Marseille and in his life and the clues from the crime scene and all that is enough to convince the jury.
Mm.
Even though there's no scientific evidence.
I don't think you need any scientific evidence in this case.
On the 13th of July, after 2 hours of deliberation, he's found guilty of triple murder.
Right. Good.
Two with premeditation. Yep. They don't think that he had planned to kill Marie-Louise, but they think that he had planned to kill the other two.
Mm. Oh, trying to give him some kind of small... he's bad. He murders grown-up women. But, you know, it was just, you know... In that case, he had no choice but to cut off this poor little girl's head.
Exactly.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. No, he's a monster.
So all his appeals are refused, and on the 31st of August at 5 a.m., his head is cut off.
Yes. Oh, come on. You didn't bury the lead there, did you? It's been a long time since we've had the own guillotine out. And
there's a little bit of story left
Oh, right, okay.
In this case, which is interesting. After his death, the commissioner who solved the crime tells one of his cops that he would like a souvenir of the case. So the cop goes to the school of medicine where the body had been sent.
Okay.
But nothing that Pranzini used to own is found there. So none of his possession is with the body. They only have the body. What they think is people help themselves. So all his stuff has been stolen.
So the there's irony.
Just
the
naked
irony.
Body left. That's it. Yes. There's nothing else. So the cop bribes an employee of the School of Medicine to get Pranzini's skin.
No, gross.
He tans it himself.
Okay.
And then he goes to a leather worker to have 3 wallets made.
Oh, that is grim.
He then gives 2 of them to the chief of police, who I didn't go into that part of the story, but it's also a long story. The chief of police was certain that the murderer was someone else and was really pushing to get that person arrested and convicted against the opinion of the commissioner who was actually looking for Pranzini.
Okay.
And they fight and it goes on for months. And anyway, it's a very long story, but I didn't go into that. Anyway, he gets one of the wallets and the cop's boss gets the other wallet. That's the one who wanted the souvenir.
But there were 3 wallets.
And kept him from one for himself.
Oh, right, okay.
The cop. The press hears about the wallets from the leather worker.
Mm.
And that makes quite a noise time.
Uh-huh.
So the justice tries to prosecute, but technically speaking, they haven't done anything illegal. The guy was dead. They didn't kill anyone. It was a convicted murderer, so he doesn't really have the right to a proper burial and all that. Mm. So they couldn't make anything stick, but that wasn't good. So eventually an inquiry is open for wrongful disposition of a body. That's pretty much all they can think might work.
Yeah.
But that gets nowhere, obviously, because investigating cops.
Back then, obviously. There's...
So the tribunal drops the charges. However, the instructing judge decided to burn the wallets himself in his office and scatters the ashes to be sure that nobody looks for those ashes. So they are destroyed.
Okay.
And that's the end of the story this time.
And that's the end of the story. Well, I don't believe him. I'm going to rush off to eBay and start looking up old antique wallets.
Remember, in Iceland, you can buy somebody's skin and make
trousers
out of it.
Yes, there are a pair of trousers. Yeah.
Apparently, it was common at the time, so not that different.
But I think the thing that they're not crotchless people. You know, you've got your own cock and balls if you're wanting. You can keep your wee coin purse warm inside someone else's coin purse. I think it's time to draw a line under this podcast. It's getting a bit bad taste.